Meg, on the first lid, smooth and fair. I look in with loving eyes, for folded here with well-known care, a goodly gathering lies, the record of a peaceful life. Gifts to gentle child and girl, a bridal gown, lines to a wife, a tiny shoe, a baby curl. No toys in this first chest remain, for all are carried away in their old age to join again in another small Meg's play. Ah, happy mother, well I know you hear like a sweet refrain lullabies ever soft and low in the falling summer rain. Joe, on the next lid, scratched and worn, and within a motley store of headless dolls, of schoolbooks torn, birds and beasts that speak no more, spoils brought home from the fairy ground, only trod by youthful feet, dreams of a future never found, memories of a past still sweet, half-writ poems, stories wild, April letters warm and cold, diaries of a willful child, hints of a woman early old. A woman in a lonely home, hearing like a sad refrain, "Be worthy, love, and love will come in the falling summer rain." My Beth, the dust is always swept from the lid that bears your name, as if by loving eyes that wept, by careful hands that often came. Death canonized for us one saint, ever less human than divine, and still we lay with tender plaint relics in this household shrine. A silver bell so seldom rung, the little cap which last she wore, the fair dead Catherine that hung by angels borne above her door, the songs she sang without lament in her prison house of pain, forever are they sweetly blent with the falling summer rain. Upon the last lid's polished field, legend now both fair and true, a gallant knight bears on his shield, Amy, in letters gold and blue. Within lie snoods that bound her hair, slippers that have danced their last, faded flowers laid by with care, fans whose airy toils are past, gay valentines, all ardent flames, trifles that have borne their part in girlish hopes and fears and shames. The record of a maiden heart, now learning fairer, truer spells, hearing like a blithe refrain the silver sound of bridal bells in the falling summer rain. Four little chests, all in a row, dim with dust and worn by time, four women, taught by weal and woe to love and labor in their prime, four sisters parted for an hour, none lost, one only gone before, made by love's immortal power nearest and dearest evermore. Oh, when these hidden stores of ours lie open to the Father's sight, may they be rich in golden hours, deeds that show fairer for the light, lives whose brave music long shall ring, like a spirit-stirring strain, souls that shall gladly soar and sing in the long sunshine after rain. It's very bad poetry, but I felt it when I wrote it, one day when I was very lonely and had a good cry on a rag bag. I never thought it would go where it could tell tales, said Joe, tearing up the verses the professor had treasured so long. Let it go. It has done its duty, and I will have a fresh one when I read all the brown book in which she keeps her little secrets, said Mr. Bear, with a smile, as he watched the fragments fly away on the wind. Yes, he added earnestly, I read that, and I think to myself, she has a sorrow, she is lonely. She would find comfort in true love. I have a heart full, full for her. Shall I not go and say, if this is not too poor a thing to give for what I shall hope to receive, take it in God's name? And so you came to find that it was not too poor, but the one precious thing I needed, whispered Joe. I had no courage to think that at first. Heavenly kindness was your welcome to me. But soon I began to hope, and then I said, I will have her if I die for it. And so I will, cried Mr. Bear, with a defiant nod, as if the walls of mist closing round them were barriers which he was to surmount or valiantly knock down. Joe thought that was splendid, and resolved to be worthy of her knight, though he did not come prancing on a charger in gorgeous array. "What made you stay away so long?" she asked presently, finding it so pleasant to ask confidential questions and get delightful answers that she could not keep silent.
"It was not easy,
but I could not find the heart to take you from that so happy home until I could have a prospect of one to give you, after much time, perhaps, and hard work. How could I ask you to give up so much for a poor old fellow who has no fortune but a little learning?"
"I'm glad you are poor. I couldn't bear a rich husband," said Joe decidedly, adding in a softer tone, "Don't fear poverty. I've known it long enough to lose my dread and be happy working for those I love."
"And don't call yourself old. 40 is the prime of life. I couldn't help loving you if you were 70. The professor found that so touching that he would have been glad of his handkerchief if he could have got at it. As he couldn't, Joe wiped his eyes for him and said, laughing as she took away a bundle or two, "I may be strong-minded, but no one can say I'm out of my sphere now, for woman's special mission is supposed to be drying tears and bearing burdens. I'm to carry my share, Friedrich, and help to earn the home. Make up your mind to that, or I'll never go," she added resolutely, as he tried to reclaim his load. "We shall see. Have you patience to wait a long time, Joe? I must go away and do my work alone. I must help my boys first, because even for you I may not break my word to Minna. Can you forgive that, and be happy while we hope and wait?" "Yes, I know I can, for we love one another, and that makes all the rest easy to bear. I have my duty also, and my work. I couldn't enjoy myself if I neglected them, even for you. So there's no need of hurry or impatience. You can do your part out west, and I can do mine here, and both be happy hoping for the best, and leaving the future to be as God wills."
"Ah, thou givest me such hope and courage, and I have nothing to give back but a full heart and these empty hands," cried the professor, quite overcome.
Joe never, never would learn to be proper, for when he said that, as they stood upon the steps, she just put both hands into his, whispering tenderly, "Not empty now," and stooping down, kissed her Friedrich under the umbrella. It was dreadful, but she would have done it if the flock of draggle-tailed sparrows on the hedge had been human beings, for she was very far gone indeed, and quite regardless of everything but her own happiness. Though it came in such a very simple guise, that was the crowning moment of both their lives, when turning from the night and storm and loneliness to the household light and warmth and peace waiting to receive them, with a glad welcome home, Joe led her lover in and shut the door. Chapter 47. Harvest Time. For a year, Joe and her professor worked and waited, hoped and loved, met occasionally, and wrote such voluminous letters that the rise in the price of paper was accounted for, Laurie said. The second year began rather soberly, for their prospects did not brighten, and Aunt March died suddenly. But when their first sorrow was over, for they loved the old lady in spite of her sharp tongue, they found they had cause for rejoicing, for she had left Plumfield to Joe, which made all sorts of joyful things possible. "It's a fine old place, and will bring a handsome sum, for of course you intend to sell it," said Laurie, as they were all talking the matter over some weeks later. "No, I don't," was Joe's decided answer, as she petted the fat poodle whom she had adopted out of respect to his former mistress.